I remember when my daughter was younger, we used to do like a truth circle thing, and she would like be like, "Mom, I need to go to the truth circle," and I had to like count to 10 and like pray, like, "Oh God, what's she about to tell me?" But like, I would have to like, I would like have to let her drop an F bomb. Back then, I was like serious about like language, and I would like have to let her drop an F bomb when she was like 4, so that she knew like to say. She would drop one, and then I would drop one, and she'd be like, "All right, Mom's cool right now." So I could.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Every single week, I bring on someone with a different expertise. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name?
It's just like we're stuck with each other. Like, let me just see you in the best light possible, because otherwise it's going to impact how I'm dealing with you. And so I was the bad kid growing up. I was bad. I was just, everybody just was like, "Destiny's bad." Like, I was just known. Even now, if I talk to my dad grabbed the spot. He would be like, "You know we're bad kid." And so my dad would talk. And I try not to do that. I try not to label them, because kids are, they're growing and their brains are developing, and they really do mold into God, especially if they hear us call them those things.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today, I am so excited for this conversation. We have, this has been like long, like awaited. Very much recommend it. I'm so happy to share the stage with her. We have Destiny, also known as Manifest Destiny.
Destiny, I know that's, yeah, that's my Instagram name. Yeah. And on TikTok, Manifest Destiny on Instagram.
So why don't you just introduce yourself, tell the people about you, a little bit about your background aspirations. Tell us about you before we jump into conversation.
Yes, I'm Destiny Ann. I am a single mom. I have 2 girls. My background is in psychology, and I have been very passionate. I'm very, very passionate about parenting, and I am a student of parenting resources. I've always been, and I just decided to share some of my insights on TikTok one day, and now I am a TikToker, and I just have an amazing community of positive, conscious, respectful parents. And so, yeah, that is how I'm here. That is me. I love to talk all things parenting.
Yeah, and you really check out her content, because it is amazing. From the first video that I saw, I'm like, "Ooh, this is it. This is the one." And then from the second video I saw, I'm like, "Ooh, I need to reach out." And then by the time I saw her third video, she had jumped from like 40,000 followers to like, I don't even know, hundreds of thousands of followers. I don't even know. And it's still growing at a crazy rapid rate. And so she's in this space. And so I really want to talk about, I haven't had an episode where we talk about single parenting, and I would love to get your insight about single parenting, about co-parenting, about, you know, what are the challenges? Like, how do you do it? And I talk to single parents. I talk to, you know, 2-parent households all the time. And, you know, everyone is like, how does it happen? How do you, especially you have multiple children, they outnumber you.
They outnumber me. They out-energy me. They out-eat me. I'm on the short end of the stick.
So what are some like, some big kind of like overall like tips you would give to parents out there, and maybe specifically single parents out there? Like, how do you get it done? Because even during, you know, and it may not be the same, but even during like the pandemic, or people like moving, or one parent is out of the home for long periods of time, and that period of time is really like, how do you manage it all? How do you do it all? Give us some tips.
Some tips. Okay, so I think that the first thing is really just the perspective of it. As soon as I realized, like, okay, this is the journey that I'm on. I'm going to be a single parent. Like, I don't like to say being a single parent is hard or it's difficult. Like, it's just the way that I look at it, because we all have circumstances as parents that make it a little bit more difficult than somebody else. And we navigate it. I mean, all of us, before we had kids, the idea of being an emergency contact seemed hard, and then we figured it out. And so I love the Marie Forleo saying, everything is figure outable. And so that's how I look at it. And I literally just take it situation by situation, because every single parent household is going to be different. I don't even look at it like that. I'm like, okay, today we have gymnastics and we have homeschool and we have tantrums. I just literally, one thing at a time. So I need somebody to help me with gymnastics. I need somebody to help me do this, and I can figure out the tantrum. I delegate, I get resources, I take care of myself so that I can show up for my kids. But I really, my mom, God bless her. One thing that I remember her always saying was just one foot in front of the other. That's it, just one foot in front of the other. And that's how I approach my single parenting. I just break it down. What's going on in this moment and how do I find a solution? That's really all that I can do. And then I give myself grace when I inevitably crash and burn.
Yeah.
And we start over again tomorrow.
let's talk about the crash and burn part, because that's always a fun conversation. Yeah, like when you, like those moments when you are overwhelmed, you know, a lot of people say, you know, you can try and, you know, tag someone else in, or at least, you know, make it through the other. At some point, there is someone to tag it, you know, to tag in. Like, what do you do when you're in a moment where a lot is happening and you're feeling overwhelmed in the moment? Like, how do you manage your own, like, emotions? How do you navigate those situations? And if you want to share a specific story or a specific time where it's happened for you, like, that is more, we're more than willing to hear that too.
Well, it's a handicap match, obviously, because I'm by myself. And so there are instances where, like, they're both throwing a tantrum, or they're both not listening, or I'm underslept or underfed and I don't have, you know, that TikTok energy. I have specifically an instance. I was staying with my friend in Northern Virginia, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'm so in tune. My kids are with me a lot, so I can see it. I can just see it coming. And I saw that the train was going to crash, and it crashed at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, okay, God. Like, I was trying to get them to go to bed, and they wouldn't go to bed. And I was like, look, if we don't go to sleep now, I'm not going to be able to wake up in the morning and drive. And I was like, so either we're going to go to sleep now or we're going to go home now. And I guess they didn't think that I was serious. I was like, all right, we're packing up. The three-year-old's grabbing Teddy, and my daughter, like the eight-year-old's like, okay, no, mom. Like, I'm sorry. I'm like, no, we really have to go. But one thing that I think is important for me when I'm that level of stressed out is articulating it. When my mom was mad, it was like silence. And so in my head, I was like, this is my fault. I did this. Like, I was making up all these stories. And so we're packing up, and I'm like, look, I'm upset. You guys, it's okay. We're going to be fine. We just need to go. It's not your fault. Mommy's having a hard time managing her emotions, and I just want to get home. Like, I was speaking, but let's keep moving. You know what I'm saying? And I'm very, very intentional about making sure that they know that whatever train wreck is coming, I feel partially responsible. I'll tell them where they're responsible, but my feelings are my feelings, and I don't want them to feel responsible for it. There are times where I cry. I'm just like, mom, you can't take it right now. Like, I'm having a hard time regulating this. I don't like what you did, but this is mommy's way of dealing with it. I just need a second. I just need a second. I'm not going to lie. My second isn't in another room. It's not. It's right here. I let them see the second, but it's just so important to me to just say the feelings. Yeah. It doesn't have to be, you did this, you did that. You're not, this is how I feel. And it makes it go away so much quicker for me and for my house. And then I'm like, all right, we went through the feelings. Now let's find the solution, please.
Yeah.
Come on, go. Gotta go. Get a Red Bull. Let's go.
I love that. I love that. It, for lots of different reasons. One, you are really modeling for them kind of your own self, you know, regulation techniques, right? Of just acknowledging the feeling, you know, saying it out loud, identifying what it is, but you're also, you know, while you're kind of in that dysregulated state, and maybe you've got some body language where maybe you're a little frustrated and maybe moving really quickly. Children really can't interpret things or see things and get in their, you know, head, oh, like it's all my fault, I'm bad, or you know, all these stories. Just like, you know, we make up stories in our mind, like all these stories that they may be making up in their mind. And by you saying it out loud, you're kind of, you are creating the story.
Yeah. Right?
And like that kind of like self-talk is not only is that like kind of regulating, just expressing the feeling, because people ask, like, you know, like, how do I handle hitting? How do I handle hitting? And that's one of the messages that I get like a lot. And there's lots of different answers, and it really depends on why the hitting is happening. But one of the reasons why children hit is because they don't have the words, the ability to express themselves or to acknowledge, to do exactly what you're doing in that moment of just acknowledging and expressing how they're feeling. So it's like either this emotion can be trapped in my body and unhealthy, and I can just unhealthily keep it in, or I can hit to get it out. But guess what? There's a third option too. We can express it verbally. And that way no one gets, you know, other people don't get hurt. We're not getting hurt. It's an emotionally healthy thing to do. And by you doing that, it's, you know, I bet, you know, your children are getting better just by that process at identifying their own emotions and communicating them and expressing them, and also taking ownership of them and not displacing them on other people. So
I mean, it diffuses the situation, because I've noticed that when they're doing something and I focus on what they're doing, they immediately go on defense. Yeah. And when we can like break down the situation and just talk about the feelings that are coming up, it really is an opportunity for them to like step back and say like, okay, I'm not in trouble. Like I can't stand that word. And my kids use it because I have, you know, we have co-parents, so they're in a different house, but it's just like, you're not in trouble. I'm just upset. I'm allowed to be upset. You're allowed to make mistakes, and I'm allowed to not like it. It's okay.
Yeah, for sure. That's one of my, like, I honestly, that's kind of like one of, I go to different schools all the time. Like constantly. And so like, I'll be in a room, and sometimes in a classroom, sometimes when I need to like talk to a child, they did something like they know they weren't supposed to do that was against the rules, and I want to talk to them about it. Like they'll, you know, yeah, they'll get in the defensive, the shoulder will get up, and they'll kind of be like this, and you know, podcast can't see me right now, but shoulders get up, and like the head slunches down, and they're getting defensive, and they're kind of in their like fight or flight mode, and you know, and I say, and it works like 85% of the time. Sometimes I do a little bit more work, but sometimes like, you're not in trouble. Yeah. Like you're not in trouble. You know, we just need to talk about it. You're not in trouble. And then they start to come over like, wait, really? Is this a trick?
This is a trick. Well, I ask my kids, because I'll say like, or they'll say, I don't want to get in trouble. And I'm like, and I'll say, what does trouble look like here? And they'll be like,
yeah, yeah.
They literally say, I don't know. And I'm like, exactly. Yeah. What is trouble? What does that mean? But yeah. I mean, my house probably is like the disappointment or something like that. And I'm like, no, like I'm fine. Look at my, I literally have to be like, look at my tone. Like I have to smile. And then I'm like, come on, it's okay. Put your guard down. It's a glass of milk.
Right. So, but you bring up actually a really good point. And we're going to actually, Tiffany actually has a really good question. Tiffany, part of our Patreon community. And I'm Tiffany, you're going to, your question is going to come up next. I think it'll be a good segue. Yeah. You mentioned, you know, co-parent, it's, you know, different rules in different households. We know what is, or just different ways of approaching things, maybe different rules. How do you kind of navigate that kind of co-parenting relationship? Are there any tips that you can give, or any lessons that you've learned along the way that?
Yeah. Man, it's been a journey. I was a terrible co-parent for a while, just all caught in feelings and stuff. And I think that becoming a better parent has helped me become a better co-parent. I say that that's like always a start. When people are like, how do I stop yelling or that? I'm like, it starts with you. It literally has nothing to do with your kid. If you have struggles in any relationship, you need to start with yourself. And just doing a lot of work for myself has helped. Like I told you, I'm in therapy with my daughter's father, and that's helping. The empathy piece is so, so important. Seeing things from the other person's perspective, respect, having clear the non-negotiables, and then just being okay with negotiating everything else and having clear boundaries with each other. We have a very, very specific parenting plan. We have revised this thing over and over, and it's fair to both of us about fairness and respect. And then just letting go. I gotta let go. I had children with you. Like, I gotta let go. And I can't micromanage everything that you do in your home. Just like I don't want you to micromanage everything that I do. And the last thing I will say is having an and approach with it. Because I used to be very, very permissive. And so it was like I could not see in my brain how he could possibly have all these rules, and you're like, you're pressuring her and you're just putting her in this. She's like at a concentration camp right now. Like, I just was like, awful. And then when I got this and perspective, like, well, there are actually things that maybe not as extreme, but seeing it from the other person's perspective, like, I could probably benefit from some boundaries, and it maybe shouldn't be the Wild Wild West 24/7. Yeah. It eases the conversation. I can validate what you're saying. And then I can say, and I feel this. And we actually had a huge breakthrough conversation in therapy the other day. And that was kind of the conversation. Like, I think you're only focusing on the permissive side of my parenting and not the fact that we do a lot of things that are similar. And when I said, and I had examples, and he was like, yeah, that is, I'm probably stuck in like 2012 destiny. So yeah, just, I think that empathy, respect, and collaboration. Anything I've said about what you should do with your kids, just do it with the co-parent.
Yeah. Oh man, that is such a, that's a TED talk right there. I think that it's, I think it's really about like the whole gentle, conscious, positive parenting, whatever you want to, you know, subscribe to, whatever you want to call it. It's really about, it's less about just how we treat children and more about how we treat people and how we and a way of being. And what I will say, what I will kind of like maybe like caution people on, if like, you know, gentle parenting your, you know, your co-parent or your partner, is that like it's got to come from an authentic, genuine place.
Absolutely.
You know, they can't feel like you're doing a thing on them, because then it's like no one likes that, and then it feels inauthentic, and I feel patronized, and that's
And it can be
problem in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I had that issue too. I mean, I've read every parenting book, so of course, then I come to therapy with all my tools, and I'm like, look, this is I'm using them all on you, and I for sure totally agree with that. But I just think that the tenets of like respect and empathy and understanding that it's going to feel contrived if you use it on your kids if it's not coming from an empathetic place, and that's why you really have to start with doing those things for yourself, having empathy for yourself and respect and boundaries for yourself, so that that just is what authentically flows from your character and from your personality.
Yes, so true. Like, and it's really a growing of, like, I don't think, my hypothesis is that like, you can't really genuinely become, and I don't know if I'm going to get some flack for this, but like, this is kind of the first time I'm articulating this out loud. But I don't think you can really become or go on, rather I say, because it's not like one place that you get to and you're there, but I don't think you can really go on the gentle, respectful, conscious parenting journey without actually genuinely, authentically growing yourself. I don't think that you can do that. And sure, and that's why like I don't really like I'll do like the scripts and like, hey, this is like this is what you can say and this is what you can do. But I've noticed like in my content, I like to really talk more about like the bigger picture and the bigger, you know, perspective, because it's not about you just saying the words. It's not just about you saying, you know, I will not let you hit, you know, it's not about just using the words. It's about being present and truly being there human to human with that other human you're engaging with.
Yeah, well, that's why I think that the book that I recommend most, like the first book, is The Conscious Parent, because of that. Because she just nails it. It's like, and that's honestly, that was one of the first books I read, and I was just like, it was mind blowing, because it literally was not about scripts and behavior, and it was just everything to do with this, like, work on this, fix this, see the child for who they are and let them be them and parent from that. And that's kind of what I run into the issue in terms of, like, this broad advice. And it's honestly why I've stopped responding to comments. Because I'm just like, it's broad. And obviously, it's not going to be specific to every single situation. I think that sometimes people are looking for, like, the answer. And I'm like, literally, I have a different child every single day. So you just got to literally be open to showing up in the moment. And that's so hard to do if you're not grounded and centered. And if you don't know yourself, you don't have boundaries for yourself, like I said. So that's so good. That's such a really good point to make. I totally agree. You got to do the work first.
Yeah. And then, like, too, I also find when it's like people aren't given the script, but they're given the perspective, or they're thinking about like the perspective of the larger approach and how to see it, that a lot of times people will come up with their own kind of like scripts or things to do. And like, I think that's so much more, I don't know, like valuable and just like, because it's the whole, I feel like I look at it as like, it's the teach a man to fish kind of deal. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm going to actually hop into Tiffany's question. I'm burping over here. I want to hop into Tiffany's question from the community.
So hey, Tiffany.
And she gets to ask questions. It's a really good one. I wouldn't have thought to ask it, but I'm glad that she did. And I'm curious to know what your answer
is. I know. I'm like cruising over it. I'm like, okay, here we go.
You're like, I really don't want to answer. Do I got to really answer this in front of everyone? Well, we'll see how it goes.
My reception is breaking up.
Okay. Don't worry. We'll schedule another meeting.
Right.
We'll have you do a video. Like, I would love to know more about how you navigate dating while being a parent. I just don't have it in me, says Tiffany. Lots of therapy and still feel jaded by my last failed relationship, and feel like I failed my child and their worthiness of having more than one secure attachment. I would also love to hear your thoughts on the stigmas of single parents.
I'll start there first. I'll start with this. Because I've struggled with that. Like, I've struggled with the idea of, like, I have kids. Like, somebody's not going to like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and that kind of messed with me for a while. But I think what I love, or the way that I look at it now, is kind of just like, I love being a mom. I love it so much, and there's somebody that is going to enjoy that about me. So the same way that I have preferences, it's okay. It's just okay that when I was single with no children, I didn't want that. So it's okay, and I kind of look at it like, it doesn't decrease my value. It just decreases my chances of getting specific people, but that's just specific people. That's the same thing with maybe how I look or how I dress or my occupation. People have preferences, and that's just one more thing on the list, and that's okay. In terms of how I navigate dating, so I am a business owner. I have like two businesses, and I just recently started like being open to the idea of dating again, because I like have a nanny now and I've got help, and I'm kind of in the flow of things. But I've been in a serious relationship before, and they were no longer in my children's life. And I felt that, like, oh my gosh, this person was so close to my child. But I just feel like the same thing we're talking about earlier, is that all you can do is show up with the right intentions and then show up in the moment when things happen. Like, I can't shield my kids from everything. I can make good decisions that I feel like are aligned with who I am. And then if it doesn't work out, that's what I'm here for. That's how we learn, you know, perseverance and how to get through things. I try not to shield them from stuff. But when it comes to just like casual dating or whatever, I'm not very like, I'll tell my daughter, like, mom's going on a date or something like that. But I'm pretty intentional about, like, bringing people around my kids. But making time, I feel like, has been more important to me now because, like, I'm still young and I, like, I want to find love and I want a partner. It's not hard being a single parent, but it would be a lot easier. and so I'm open to the idea of it, but I'll be honest, it's not like priority number one. My kids, my business, and me are like priorities, and I'm open to it. But I don't know, man. That one is a tough one. I've done therapy, and I figured it out, and I don't. This is what I do say sometimes. Like, I don't feel like I have the capacity to, like, go through a heartbreak. That's what my friends are like, you need to get serious. And I'm just like, I ain't got time for that. Like, I'm happy single. So I'm in the space where I'm just like, when it happens, it's going to happen. And I'm not going to force it. And it's going to feel right.
Yeah. I think it's a good space to be in. I do have a question, a kind of follow-up question with that is, how would you decide? Let's say you do you go like on a date, oh, mom's going on a date, like, okay, you go on a few dates and maybe you're deciding, you know, you like each other, you're feeling each other. When to bring someone like home and to meet your children?
So I think it's really dependent on the person. I would never let myself get like super serious with somebody without my kids meeting them. I think that's a recipe for a disaster. But once I've recognized like this person is a good character and I think that my kids would like this person, then I probably would do it in a very casual kind of way. I do life with my kids. So my kids meet tons of people. Like they know a ton of adults. So if I like introduce my kid to somebody at the grocery store or something, they wouldn't be they wouldn't do that because like I said, we literally are around people all of the time. So I would probably do it in a casual way. And even my last relationship, it was literally to the point where my daughter was like, Mom, I can't, like, I think you should, like, I, until I get that, this is just a friend. This is just a friend of the family. Same as Miss Shay or something. Like, I wouldn't introduce somebody as my boyfriend. I wouldn't do that with my kids. Because I don't want them to be like, just constantly confused, you know? I wouldn't want that. But I am of the belief that, like, I want my daughters to know, like, dating is okay. And so I want to show them that in an age-appropriate way. That's just my personal belief. I want them to be, like, understand, like, you don't have to pick the first one. You can have options. And so I'm okay with them knowing that, but they're just mommy's friends until they give me the go-ahead.
Until they give me the go-ahead, like, wow.
Yeah, they're the boss.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, all right, he's coming over a little bit more.
Exactly, yeah, the eight-year-old for sure. And she's, she's so nosy. Like, she's so nosy. So she would tell me. If she's like, nah, it's a no, then I'm like, sorry. Yeah. Boss said it's a no.
We got to stop seeing each other.
Yeah, this isn't going to work. We can't even be friends, to be honest. Yeah.
Go around no more. Like, we're in the same friend group, but we got a divorce. You take some friends, I'll take some.
We broke up before we started dating. I guess.
Yeah. Oh man, that's great. So actually, let's circle back to the Anne conversation because you made a song, you made a video, and I just duetted it. She didn't even know.
The duet was better than the original.
The duet couldn't have happened without the original.
Like, I'm just saying.
The song, what? Like, do you still, and?
Kiss me both. Like, I was singing it all the time, and I'm just like, yes, I made it. Somebody told me I was Coco Melon for parents.
Yes, you are, killing it.
So funny.
But I want to dig, like, because that is something that people struggle with a lot, and, I know, like, I've, like, even as a teacher, I've been in that, like, okay, what are my boundaries? Like, what are, because I think I started off as kind of working with children as I think a lot of people kind of do. The trend that I see is, like, a lot of people come in, they're either really timid or they're, like, fun, or they've been a parent, or they start off like they're really strict, and really the ones who are like really like strict with the boundaries are usually people who have been like they're either, you know, they've been parents before, they work for children for a long time, and they're just like, I know my boundaries, I'm going to set them on the first day, and that's like their main focus. And I started off like, when I first started working with kids, like I didn't know really what I was doing, but I just knew that like was important to connect with them. Yeah. And so I was kind of like the fun teacher. I was really good at being the fun teacher, but didn't really know how to like set the boundaries and do the and be the fun teacher, but also let them know when I was serious and when something like really needed to be done, when something like, you know, really needed to happen. And that was a balance that I really had to find. And I feel like over years, it feels at this point, working with children in schools, it feels pretty like second nature to me.
Yeah.
I kind of like almost know the cues like in my body. I'm like, okay, I need to kind of like, all right, boundary time. And yeah. Like,
boundary man.
But with love. But I want to know, and you kind of talked about too, like you started your journey, you said permissive, yeah, kind of over like permissive parenting, but now you've kind of struck the balance. What is the balance, and how did you find the balance? What was the aha moment? What was it like when you first started to kind of move away from permissiveness to a more and approach of boundaries with empathy? Like, talk to me a little bit about that.
So when I first had my daughter, I was 19, and I was a hot mess, to say the least. I was 19 with, you know, my mom was there. If the baby was crying, I was asleep. My mom had the baby. And then so when my mom passed away, my daughter was grieving, obviously. And so it was like, I just had her on kid gloves. Like, I just did not want to, I just wanted her to be happy. Like, everything was just make her happy. You want to go to Disneyland? Let's go to Disneyland. You don't want to go to school? You don't have to go to school. And it really wound up, it was terrible. It was awful. Like, she just had no respect for me. And I was always going crazy. I couldn't get her to do anything. I started to feel like she was lazy. And so I was like, I need to figure this out. And I don't know, I think it might have been Peaceful Parent Advocates. I'm not sure what it was where I got introduced to the idea of boundaries. Might have been therapy. But I was like, I had to sit down with her and I was like, okay, we really need to figure out like how I can respect you, how you can respect me, because as a team, this isn't working. I can't be the best mommy for you because I feel like I can't keep you safe in moments where you need to be safe. I feel like I don't really know what you need because our relationship is messed up. Like, I had a collaborative conversation with her and she was like 5. And I was like, we need to figure out something. I don't want to just be like the authoritarian, but we got to figure out something that works for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, 1 second. Hold on. I'm sorry. I think you knew that we were recording. I'm so sorry, but go ahead. I feel like I had to sit down with her and do like, we had to have a conversation. And that's really what I say to people when they're like, my kid's not listening, or I need to do this, I need to do that. I'm like, you don't need to be talking to me. You need to talk to your kid, and you guys need to sit down and have a conversation. And it's made like the biggest difference in our situation, because anytime we're having issues, we go right back to that conversation where we're sitting down and what works for you? What's gonna work for mommy? And like like you said, you just feel like you're on autopilot right now. And I feel like I really understand. I can see the cues when she's getting upset or when I need to make shifts. I completely understand and get it.
Yeah, yeah. I wanna talk about, I guess, two more questions.
Okay.
How do you know, you know, we mentioned kind of like the body cues. Are there any times where like boundaries are pushed and you feel like you kind of let go of the boundaries? Are you kind of like, you relax on yeah. boundaries? Like, tell me, and what is your, how do you decide to do that if you do that at all?
Yeah, so Kennedy, he's my oldest, the 8-year-old, like she's homeschooled, so I pick up on the cues all the time. And so when it's too lax, I can see it in her confidence. Her confidence starts to go down and she starts to like feel bad because it's like we've made these rules and these boundaries for ourselves and we're not respecting them. We're not keeping our word with ourselves. And so that's where I'm like, okay, next week, maybe we need to do X, Y, and Z. Then in moments where she's like not feeling as much joy or we're not as spontaneous or she's hypercritical on herself, I'm like, all right, maybe we're going too hard. She's not as curious with her learning. She doesn't want to just go outside and stare at the bugs or whatever. She's like, she'll be like, well, what grade level am I supposed to be reading? Like, she'll have those conversations. I'm like, let's go to the park. We need to go to the park. And so I can really pick up on those cues. So I'll give you an example. Maybe like 3 weeks ago, I think I might have told you this on the phone call that we had. She was just like, I don't feel very good. Like, I don't feel pretty. And like, she was having a confidence conversation. And you know, me, mom, I was just like, I want to go in with the hard affirmation guns, but I was like, no, let's just dissect this. And I was, you know, asking her more questions. And I was like, you know, well, she was like, it just was a hard week. And so I asked her, what did she think was hard about it? And we sat there and we planned like, okay, well, next week, maybe we won't flake on X, Y, and Z, and maybe we will. And let's try to wake up. Let's try different things. I'm all about resources and problem solving. But that's so hard for parents to do when they don't have much time with their kids to pick up on those cues and like not know what's going on. And I think that's where I have a heart for parents, because I've been in that situation where it's like, I gotta make ends meet. I gotta be gone all day. By the time I come home, I have to have the energy for tomorrow. So I gotta get my kids in the bed and we're just like boom, 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 routine. I can't be present. But I know that finding those small gaps where I can be present to get to know my kid, being in the car and playing 21 questions instead of listening to the radio, or during bath time, asking about their day, or, you know, doing nopes and dopes at the dinner table. What was great? What wasn't great? So that we can build that intimacy so that I can pick up on those cues made a difference when I didn't have, you know, when we weren't waking up at noon.
Yeah. That's powerful. I'm going to hop to the next question because I want to be respectful of your time.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit and you said that, before this conversation started, that you have some content coming up about, you know, bad kids, good kids. Kind of what are your thoughts? I'm a little curious to know, like, were you like, what was your label growing up, and how do you, you know, are your children like labeling like themselves? You feel like they're like how are you navigating kind of that good kid, bad kid mentality, thought process as a parent yourself? And do you have any advice for other parents?
I think the way that we see a thing really impacts the way that we approach it. That's just with anything. And you can do that in situations that you can change, but it's just like, we're stuck with each other. Like, let me just see you in the best light possible, because otherwise it's going to impact how I'm dealing with you. And so I was the bad kid growing up. I was bad. I was just, everybody just was like, Destiny's bad. Like, I was just known, even now, if I talk to my dad grabbed a spot. He would be like, hey, you know where bad kid. That's how my dad would talk. And I try not to do that. I try not to label them, because kids are, they're growing and their brains are developing and they really do mold into God, especially if they hear us call them those things. But I think that it makes me do this. And it's not effective for me to do that, because I set the tone, I set the culture. And if I'm constantly focused on them, then I can't do what I need to do as mommy and as the parent to shift the dynamic in the home. So I definitely focus on the behavior. I don't like this behavior. I have no problem telling my kids I don't like stuff. I think that's acceptable. They're allowed to tell me what they don't like. I'm gonna tell you, I don't like this behavior, but it's never them. And when my child is struggling with confidence, I'm very intentional about letting them know that. Even when I'm upset, even when I'm triggered, I had to practice. It felt weird saying, I'm upset that you're screaming, but I know you're not a bad person. Like, I never heard anything like that growing up. It's felt so weird. But now they can like articulate those things back to me. And that's really special to me. So I feel like when we focus on kids and not behaviors, they start to internalize that. And I think I said that from, you know, in a previous video, but it's really hard to choose appropriate behaviors when you think that you're inherently flawed.
Yeah. Yeah. And really also, you know, bad kid, maybe not as bad as you growing up.
Probably a bad kid.
And you know, I feel like, at least from my experience, and kind of eventually it's like it becomes something like you're labeled or you're told something like over and over again, and but that's the message you're given. It's like I might as well lean into it. Like
I'm gonna get in trouble either way. You're gonna think I did it, so I'm just gonna do it. You're not gonna believe me when I said I didn't, so I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah, I might as well be the bad kid.
But you know what made what I feel like I missed out on with my parents is the opportunity to learn from my mistakes from people that actually knew better, because I was so scared to tell them when I made a mistake. There's so much like on the job training I had. So many things I did not have to be in. Like, I'm like, how am I even alive? Because I was terrified. I was literally getting parented by the other middle school and high schoolers. Yeah. Like, the older, like I'd be in ninth grade and the 12th graders were telling me how to live, because I was terrified of, you know, talking to my parents about stuff. Mm.
Man, and that really goes back to, I don't know if you saw like my like spoken word piece I did about
vegan.
Yeah, like that's really like what you're talking about is like very close to like the core of like my vision for the world and for adults, that like that little destiny doesn't have to go to the ninth grader, you know, because that's the only person that she feels comfortable talking to about whatever, like, you know, she's going through mistakes that she's making, that she can, you know, that they're maybe not even just her parents, but also other trusted adults that she feels like she can go to, that she's not going to be hit or shamed or and judged for the mistakes that she's making, that, you know, people will see like, yeah, you're having a hard time. You're just trying to meet your needs. You're trying to discover the world. You're trying to figure out where you fit in and see it from there and be curious instead of judgmental and shameful and name calling because we're making mistakes and we're trying to figure things out when we're kids. And that's a part of the learning process. Like making mistakes is literally a part of the learning process. And so when we become afraid of making mistakes or sharing our mistakes, talking about it, then we are disrupting, stunting our growth.
The intimacy is important for them to have somebody like that. And you made a good point that it doesn't have to be a parent. I'm so glad I have people and like women in my life that I trust. Like, you need to call Auntie Mia, that's okay. If you don't want to talk to me about it, that's fine. That is so important because they need somebody that they feel that level of intimacy and a level of openness with. I remember when my daughter was younger, we used to do like a truth circle thing, and she would like be like, "Mom, I need to go to the truth circle," and I had to like count to 10 and like pray, like, "Oh God, what's she about to tell me?" But like, I would have to like, I would like have to let her drop an F-bomb. Back then, I was like serious about like language, and I would like have to let her drop an F-bomb when she was like 4, so that she knew like to say. She would drop one, and then I would drop one, and she'd be like, "All right, Mom's cool right now." So I can.
Hold on. That's really funny. I love it. And I want to just clarify it because look, see, these are all the, like, look, you might have an extra tool. So like you would, your 4-year-old would understand like, hey, I need to tell you something that's going to be hard for me to say. I'm kind of like fearful about what your response might be. But like, it's like, hey, this is kind of like, I know if I can say this word, then I can say anything. I can say other things to you.
Yeah.
And so she says the word first, or did you say the word first?
No, I would say what the F, and then I'd be like, okay, it's all right. And then she's like, what And I'd be like, hey, what do you talk about? And I would just, I would make it, I would be intentional about like reacting like super, super like, chill, all right, cool, let's go. And she would be like, Mom, I didn't leave turn the light off in the kitchen. Yeah, so I think those moments allowed us to have opportunities. Yeah, the questions. Ask questions and share intimate questions, because building that is going to make conversations a lot easier, them coming to you a lot easier, and being intentional, like, all right, I'm going to the bathroom, I'm gonna prep myself for answers that I wouldn't maybe be ready for spontaneously. And we used to do like spa night, and like for her back, we would like, when she was little, we would like do like the bubbles and incense and all this stuff, and like it would be very intimate, and we would play 21 questions, and I would ask deep questions, she would ask deep questions. And I feel like doing that in the beginning of our relationship was so, so beneficial, because now she will talk to me about anything. And now it's easier. I don't have to like turn around and hide my face. And so I got a really good poker face now. And inside I'm like, I'm not prepared. I'm just a grown child. What do I say?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I know I keep saying this, but one last question.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Okay.
This is good. I'm enjoying this. Why don't you think that more people don't go on? What do you think the barrier? Let me ask you this. What do you think the barriers are to people kind of going on this gentle, respectful, conscious parenting journey? You know, what do you think? Why don't you think more people go on the journey?
Conditioning, obviously. Conditioning and stress. I think that I hate to say this, but I feel like money has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Tell me more.
I feel like a lot of us just don't have the time. It's not, and people always used to think that like, this is so easy and you just do whatever. And I'm like, positive parenting is hard. It is literally the opposite of what my bones and my body is telling me to do. And it takes time and it takes intentional effort. And when you are literally in survival mode, you almost don't have time for that. You know what I'm saying? So I think that a lot of us are in survival mode. A lot of us are so attuned with the external world and pleasing others and keeping up and all of that stuff that we completely miss the important things. A lot of us are living unconsciously, if you will. And I think that that has a lot to do with it, this unconscious conditioning, which is why I don't approach parents in a forceful way, because I genuinely feel like most parents in their core believe that they're doing the best. I believe a lot of most parents are doing the best that they can with where they're at. I think I would give them tools to get them somewhere else. Don't even focus on the parenting, get you somewhere else. Because when I created financial freedom, when I freed myself from a toxic relationship, when I freed myself from my past trauma, when I started reparenting myself, that's when my parenting changed. You know, when I got out of my conditioning. So I think that a lot of it has to do with we're in survival mode and we can't even take care of ourselves a lot of times. So how on earth are we going to be gentle with someone else? And we're not gentle with ourselves. We work all day and we're stressed and we have terrible relationships. Like, I think that's what the problem is.
Hmm. Yeah. And it's, it's the fear and survival kind of mentality that will push you to do things to then put your children in a fearful survival mentality to live, potentially their entire lives unless they learn to live differently, unless they learn to grow and do the work that we, maybe had a hard time doing or weren't able to do or didn't have the resources to do. And I think that is I think I agree. I definitely think that that definitely plays a part in the cycle. And it's really about like breaking out of that mentality. Cause you think about it, like a lot of the survival. So for an example, it's, let's say it has to do with our attitudes about school, or, you know, money's another one, but let's do, you know, school. It's a lot of times we have the mentality of like, you have to suffer through this. Like school is, it's terrible. And life is terrible. So you're going to suffer through it.
Get through it.
Yeah. And you know, if I got to be a part of making you suffer through it and making you kind of feel bad, then so be it. And so then children will go their whole lives kind of with this narrative, like, okay, life sucks. Like school sucks, jobs suck. Like my parents had miserable lives and they've been given the message that I'm going to have a life is miserable. There's no way out of it. And not even just hard, because things can be hard and not miserable. Like,
yeah, that's so
I think giving children the message that things are hard is fine. But I think we have a tendency to say give the message. What'd you say?
It's like, it's just this burdensome, like all you got to do is just, I mean, I don't know. Everybody's just working hard and that's it. And there's no purpose. There's no joy. There's no like passion. I think most of us want our children to be successful more than we want them to be happy. Mm-hmm.
And Dusty, you just opened up a whole can of worms. What is success? How are we defining success? Are we defining it with, you know, money becoming
married, marriage and a house and a car? That's it. Money, marriage, and a car.
And I know there are so many people who have the job, the marriage, the house, the car. It's all on Instagram, perfect and
beautifully curated.
But they are miserable. And then there are people who don't have they're living check to check, and they are, you know, they got the hoopty, they got the car, it gets them from point A to point B.
Right.
And you know, maybe there's a single parent, or maybe they're not married, but they're fulfilled and they are happy. They are living purposeful lives. And I think that with the whole like American dream that like we talk about, I almost feel like we need to shift and kind of like redefine what is the American dream.
Well, you know what? Yeah. Just the examples that you gave, we could say the opposite. There are people with all of those things that are happy. And there are people with none of those things that are miserable. I think the point that we miss is that it's not our journey. When they come out, it's not our journey. Because when I see my two kids, from where they are right now, I don't like to, you know, put a story on them, but the 8-year-olds would be happy with that. The 3-year-old could live in the woods, okay? And so just not projecting my wants, not projecting my fears on them, because we get to we define what success is. I like money. Money like really does it for me. A lot of things do it for me, but I enjoy money and I'm happy. Like, I don't like not having stuff. I don't like it. Some people don't need stuff, and I think that's okay, that we're different. And I think you have to parent the child that's in front of you and be supportive. And if my kid told me, I want to go join the circus, make $3 an hour and run off with the love of my life, I'd be like, sis, good. What can I help you? And it's like out that I want a husband and I want to be a wife and have kids, 10 kids. I'm like, great. What can I do to help you? I always say that. I feel like I'm Yoda. That's it. That's all. I'm just Yoda. I'm not the dictator. I'm not the author of this story. I'm just like the friendly green guide here to help you wherever you're trying to go. That's it. Whatever success is to you.
And I think it's appropriate to say, like, hey, like, oh, you want to do the circus? Like, let's do some research about the circus. Like, I'm for it. I'm with you. Like, if that's your dream, you want to be a trapeze artist, you want to be like, that's your dream, go live it. Let's do some research to it too. And let's, you know, you're free to make the decision, but let's think about it together. Right. I'm not judging you for it. I think it's a worthy dream to have, but let's talk about it. Let's make sure that it's something that you really want. It's something that you really thought through. And then, go do it. And maybe she goes to the circus and comes back, you know, a week later, right? And that's what she needed, that experience, as opposed to like, no, you will not go to the circus. Go to Harvard. And then she spends her whole life like, I want to go to the circus. I want to be in the circus. She's in Harvard. She's miserable. And, you know, and that's what was really miserable for her, that she never got to like live out.
Right. Not that exact thing.
Right.
Well, are you familiar like with unschooling and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So the whole strewing concept and like constantly putting, you know, different stimuli and different things in front of your child. And if something sticks, like go all at it. And I think that when I first started unschooling, they were like, so she's just going to pick, like, y'all just not going to do anything. And I'm like, no, we're going to be open and curious. And then when we find something, we're going to like go hard at it. You love space. Yeah. We're going to documentaries and the museums and the planetariums, and we're taking models and all of that stuff. But it's your decision. You make the choice. And then I do the research. We do the research and we implement together. But I think that giving them, just like you said, letting them make the mistakes or make the decisions is really important.
And then, you know, maybe they come out of the circus a year from now and they're like, wow, that was a great learning experience. I'm never going to do it again, but I've grown so much of a person. I value, you know, animals or people who do hard labor or whatever, you know, and like it is their journey and we can't dictate what that journey should look like for them. Mm-hmm. And like no one knows a person like themselves, right? Like, you know, like you, like I can never know what's inside your mind, what's inside your heart, like you do, right? And the more that we allow children to look inward and to know themselves and to like trust themselves and to go through that process, I think the better off that they're going to be at, you know, finding what their thing is, whether it's money or it's the circus.
Oh God, that's so true. Like how are they gonna have confidence in themselves if we're constantly convincing them to be us?
Yeah, right. Destiny, we gotta stop right
now. Oh man, this was so good.
It was so good. I'm gonna stop the broadcast. We'll just do a little, everyone say bye.
Bye.
Man. What's my name? What's my name?